on my way, up north, up on the venture. I pulled back the hood, and I was talking to you, and I knew then it would be a lifelong thing, but I didn't know that we could break a silver lining.
Welcome to Poets Cafe. This is host Lois P. Jones. We're traveling through the woods, but we're going much farther than grandmother's house today. Meet the wolf, the witch, and Red Riding Hood. But this is not the little Red Riding Hood you've met in the storybook. This is a whole new Red. With us in the cafe is poet Lana Heckman Ayers.
Red Riding Hood begins a new diary. I was not a little girl when I finally met up with the wolf. That discovery happened as a woman. By then, I could find my way to Grandma's place blindfolded. Being her designated caretaker, the goody-two-shoes girl, grown up to be somebody's Mrs. Wright. Married to a lumberjack, I was confounded by how small a place home can be. A kitchen, a bedroom, a grassy front yard fine enough for neighbors to see. I pined for skylines of brick and glass, conversation deeper than a grocery list, a map with too many streets to walk in one day. The fabulous, so hot for morality, twisted my tail every which way. I didn't know then what the wolf was, only that he was, and I was, supposed to fear him, not want to be near him. That red hood, that snifter of brandy, everyone said she was asking for trouble. Trouble was what I got, and I've got no regrets, except for any hurt I caused. The moral of my side of the story is this. You can't find yourself without first getting lost.
Great. Thank you, Lana. Thank you for coming all the way from Washington to the Poets Cafe. We're so happy to have you here today. Now, this is from your book. Actually, there's two books. This one is the beginning of the story, What Big Teeth, and then that is followed by A New Red. And this story, how did this come about, this unraveling? Did these characters start speaking to you? What was the beginning of this?
Well, thank you, Lois. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I pretty much Red Riding Hood kind of showed up on her own. I was sitting down thinking I was going to write a poem about my father and about something that had happened when I was a child. And all of a sudden, Red Riding Hood just showed up there. And she proclaimed herself. And I...
With her hood.
With her hood. And I just followed her. And she was pretty much... pushy. I mean, every time I sat down to write, there she was again. No matter what it was I wanted to write about, she had something to tell me.
And she showed up,
mm-hmm.
And then there are other characters that started showing up,
they
too.
They did. I think they felt that their voice wasn't getting fair time, equal time. So the wolf did show up, and Red Riding Hood's mother, her husband, one of her girlfriends.
Everybody wanted to get in on the action.
Baba Yaga was there. So, yeah, a lot of people wanted something to say. They felt that they hadn't gotten correct representation in the Red Riding Hood story we all thought we knew.
Hmm. And it's a wonderful story for our listeners out there. This is not the fairy tale. It's a fairy tale gone wild, and it has great moments, pithy, witty, dark. It's an adult story, and as I've heard it read, it's about a woman's path to self-love and self-knowledge. Did you know it was going to be like that? Did you have any idea when these poems started coming out where it was going to go?
I really didn't know. I mean, I think the first poem that showed up was actually about a woman, about Red's not being able to get pregnant. So I had no idea what was going to happen after that.
Yeah.
So it was kind of mysterious to me.
It's exciting, isn't it? I mean, it's really a departure because this is your, my goodness, these last two are part of your fourth collection. You have chapbooks out.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, the fourth and the fifth. They have two other full-length and another chapbook.
Right, which were very different than this.
Very different. I have not done anything like this before, nor did I intend to, really.
Well, let's hear a little bit more. We're going to hear what Baba Yaga has to say. And I do want to fit in as well that lovely little poem from the wolf, if we can do that at some point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Baba Yaga advises Red Riding Hood, and it begins with a quote. I was tired of being a woman, tired of the spoons and the pots, tired of my mouth and my breasts, Anne Sexton. I've pulled the plow by my teeth, fed souls of unborn babes on the marrow of my own bones. I've called clouds down from heaven, swallowed the stars while in my raven guise. I've charmed snakes, sung to wolves, hummed thunder and spit rain. No one can claim I've had a dull life. I'm nobody's wife and no one's grandma. Don't come by my roost looking for fresh baked pie, for gooey cookies. I'll give you fire if you bargain fair, and even a lock of my steely hair. But you won't get a hug from me. Don't come whining looking for someone to wipe your snotty nose. I'd sooner make soup from your toes. I don't have time to waste on complainers. And men, I loved one once. He was a wood-cutting dunce like yours, looking to marry his mother in a younger body. I told him to take a hike. And when that didn't work, I cut out his eyes and sent him toward the pike. That Oedipus has not been seen or heard from since. Don't wince, honey. Take my advice. Command mice. Enchant spindles. Put foxes in a trance. Teach your chicken-legged house to dance. A man will just keep you down. How are you going to patrol the gateway of the dead, wearing glass slippers and a ball gown? Trade in that red cape for an even redder dress. Live your story, your own, not mine. Never say yes when you mean no. And mean no all the time.
I love her. I love her character. She really knows who she is and what she wants. And it's interesting. I mean, she's definitely got the sort of feminist attitude, but she's learned the hard way, and she doesn't take any, you know, guff from anybody. And she's somebody who has something, you know, worthy to listen to. I think all of these characters really, as you break them down, become different archetypes and aspects of humanity.
Sure. I think Baba Yaga, she's a much reviled character in many of the stories that and folktales that come to us.
Right.
But really, she's one of the early women of power in folktales. And so, of course, she had to be ugly and covered in warts and have this weird chicken house. And, you know, she couldn't be a heroic figure and be a heroine in the normal sense. But she is power, and she is what men fear in women and what women fear in claiming for themselves.
And in going beyond the superficial aspects of beauty, you know, too, and this acceptance of just like, I am who I am, and you don't have to compromise, because we do, it does happen, you know, different times in our life. And she's just saying, you know, say no and mean it.
Yes.
Don't accept less than what you deserve, really.
Yeah.
And I love the lines and the inner rhythms that you have. And put foxes in a trance, teach your chicken-legged house to dance. Yeah, I just want to go, yeah. She's a great, great character. Now, if we can hear from the wolf briefly.
This poem is What the Wolf Whispered to Red During Their First Encounter. Your eyes are like autumn after all the leaves have come down.
I love that. I had to hear his voice, you know, because he's obviously once such a strong character. I mean, this has so many levels of it, but it is a love story, too.
It is a love story of sorts. He's kind of a romantic figure. This wolf happens to be an artist.
Right.
He's actually quite cultured. He knows all about paintings, and He's a painter himself, and he has a lot of knowledge that Red has never encountered before.
He's a different kind of wolf.
He is a very different kind of wolf.
You're listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK. I'm Lois P. Jones, and my guest today is Lana Heckman Ayers, and we're talking about wolves in the wild and wolves we've met. And I actually did meet a man like that who was quite a sleek wolf and turned me on to jazz and Mozart. And I was one amongst the many, you know, that flew by. But you can look at those experiences and go, you know, what did I learn from that? My whole life changed. And all that pain that I went through took me to another place. And that's part of where my own voice was able to come out as an artist. So you don't know what those encounters will bring to you.
Yeah, that's true. I think I recognize some of my own story and Red Riding Hood's story as well. I think she didn't know what she was capable of or what she could dream of being until she met someone who had bigger dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew things were possible in the world that she didn't.
Right, because she had this sort of cloistered life. Mm-hmm. And so now, here comes the wolf. And he has a wonderful poem, or actually they have a kind of a duet where they're talking at the art museum.
Mm-hmm.
Could you read that one?
Yes. Red Riding Hood and the Wolf discuss Rothko. And it begins with a quote. Time is white, mosquitoes bite. I've spent my life on nothing. Loreen Nydecker. They stand in front of Rothko's painting, white over red. The wolf says, "What do you see?" Red looks deeply. "I see two blocks of color, one atop the other." "Yes, but there's more." The wolf implores her, "Look again. As if you're leaving." Red steps back, and as she does, like Lot's wife, turns. She sees the bottom of the canvas burns, the top becomes a cavity. Red informs the wolf. Inside desire's many rooms are many closets, but all of them are empty.
It's terrific. That brings to mind so much, and the transformative power of art and how it layers with the transformative power of her connection with the wolf. You've written a lot of work based on art.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me about that, your connection.
Well, I've always been I've been a very visual person and very captivated by things in the world. And I can still remember my first trip to an art museum was a school class trip, and we didn't get to see very much. But I just remember being startled because I'd only seen photographs in books. And when you stand in front of a painting for the first time, it's just a really miraculous thing to see that the hand strokes that went into this painting, to see the way the light affects it, to see the painting from different angles in the room and see how it changes, how the light changes it. I mean, it was just amazing. And when I was finally allowed to travel on my own, alone as a teenager, I would go to the Museum of Modern Art all the time because I just found that place, just a place where I could find a reflective pool inside myself when looking into the different pieces of art. And I had an encounter probably very similar to Red's with Rothko because, you know, I'd seen pictures and I thought, oh, what is it? It's just colors. What does that mean? What is that? It's, you know, I could do that, you know. But then when you stand in front of it and you just see the breadth and the depth of the color and just the way that it sort of moves with you when you move in the room, and it just awakened something inside me, conversations I didn't know I could have with myself.
Yeah, I mean, having that live experience, and nothing takes the place of seeing the art up close and personal. I think you've said it so eloquently. And I know I've had similar experiences. We talked a little bit about that, you know, even from a certain genre of music. As much as music can come across to you on the air, seeing the performers, being in that ambiance, being in this blues club, you know, where everybody's sweating and you're just feeling the rhythm, it comes alive in you. And art, it's like you're allowed to mesh with it fully by being present with it.
There's a dialogue that happens. It feels like it changes your chemistry somehow.
Let's segue away from Red Riding Hood for a little while. Your experience, your breadth of writing branches out into so many areas. You do workshop. You are a professional manuscript consultant. You're now also, you were the poetry editor of Crab Creek Review, but you're a contributing editor as well. And you are one of the most invested, involved, and you host Soul Food Books, invested, involved poets, constantly reading. You have a huge library. And I love your poetry because it has so many aspects to it. I know I'm going to learn something new about Lana when I read her poetry. And there's one in particular that I love, which I wish you'd read, is called Because God Doesn't Have Wings.
Sure. Because God doesn't have wings. He's jealous of his angels, how they fly about creation without fear of falling. God is a trapeze artist who always relies on the net. He twirls, pivots, extends his arms as if wing bone. The vacuum fails to uphold him. God screams, bloody light. And so it is. He shouts again. Into being spring solar winds, oxygen, the breath of a lover the morning she leaves. Catch me, God cries. And the earth appears, blue pail of water. You here on it, hidden in the hydrangea bush, leaf still, your butterfly net poised.
Beautiful. It's interesting because I wouldn't consider that. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what your belief system is, but I would consider that quite spiritual in the sense that God becomes more human through that poem and shows himself as not as being not infallible, you know.
Well, you know, have you ever heard that old question, can God create a boulder so heavy even he cannot lift it? You know, it's sort of I think looking at the idea of, can you create something that goes beyond your own limits? You know, can you create something that has this amazing, unexpected, outlasting wonder that you yourself didn't know? So I think of it in that way, that maybe that's what we're all striving to do. We're striving in some way to make a difference in whatever way that is. And it really is beyond what we think we can do.
Yes, and in a sense, bigger than ourselves, or knowing that potential is there. And so that's true. It speaks to the individual as well as kind of a, you know, a concept of a supreme being. You're listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK. I'm Lois B. Jones, and my guest is Lana Heckman Ayers, and we're discussing the wolf, God, and the universe. And there are so many poems of yours that I would love to read. Let's move on to your current work, which is your focus right now. You've had some losses, and your brother recently passed away, and you've been starting to write about this. Tell me a little bit about what's going on there.
Well, I had an older brother. He was 6 years older than me, and he was kind of a delayed victim of September 11th. He was at the World Trade Center and building number 4.
I didn't know that.
And as a result of inhaling the burning jet fuel, we believe that he and lots of rescue workers that day contracted this very rare form of leukemia that is pretty much incurable. But it is associated with toxins and things like that. And so there were many people that passed away as a result of contracting it. And he was one of them. We had a very complicated and difficult relationship, as brothers and sisters can have. But through the process of his being ill and coming to terms with his own illness and his impending death, we had a chance to form a very brief but very beautiful relationship.
Mm. That's great. And you're writing now. He's visiting you in different ways, and this is a beautiful poem that reflects a dreamlike connection. Mm-hmm. That you had. Would you read that for us?
Sure. The dead boy visits the Hayden Planetarium, which surprises me because my brother's funeral was just a few days ago. Tonight, he is here for the Beatles' laser light show, and so am I, and we are both alone. He is a few rows ahead of me. I don't know it in the psychedelic bliss until the show ends with Let It Be and the house lights come on. The dead boy's hair is back to its slick black fullness. His skin is blush again. Hello, I call. My brother turns. His eyes are glassy. You're here too, my brother says, as if it's nothing to meet like this in a dream of Manhattan. Where are Merrill and the boys, I say. But the dead boy ignores me. He says, I remember I saw this show 30 years ago. Thought I'd see it one last time. How about we get some coffee, I say. No, it's late. I have to get back, my brother says. Back where, I say, not wanting the real answer. The dead boy shakes his head, half coughs, half laughs, steps out the door to the stone walk, where I know he's already become moonlight.
Mm. Very powerful. He is a lover of science fiction, wasn't he?
He was, yes.
And has that had some kind of influence on you?
Well, yes. I mean, he was older, so he got to control the TV set. And so I had to watch, you know, Star Trek and Godzilla movies, mm-hmm. and The Twilight Zone and whatever he was interested in. And I became a lover of those things, having all that exposure. And I think it was, he just was interested in the fantastic.
Yes.
So that's something that interests me, too.
And it has an element in your work. I mean, there's such a sense of wonder in life. It, regardless of whether we're traveling, Red Riding Hood's path or, another direction, there is a sense of what's happening now and how am I connected to the world. And it's, you wanted to be an astronaut, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the, I still remember the moon landing. I was only, I think I was 7 years old at the time, but it had a big impact on me. It really did say, wow, anything is possible.
Yeah.
You can walk on the moon. And I thought, I want to do that. I want to walk on the moon. I did. I thought that would be the perfect thing to do.
Would you take a shuttle to the stars, as nervous as you are about
flying? Yeah, I think it's ironic that I wanted to be an astronaut. I hate to fly. Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I would.
I'd have to, just for the experience.
Yes, if there was a lottery and I would enter it and get a ticket. I mean, I know there are people that can afford to buy tickets, but
yeah,
that would be fun. I would do it.
What it would be like to look at the Earth from a distance. I've always wanted that. Let's move on to another rather different influence in your life, and also a recent, very recent loss, your mother.
Okay.
And you have a poem which, you have that one? That's
yes.
From Dancing in My Bones. And by the way, all of these books, you can find. A New Red is on Pecan Grove Press. What Big Teeth is on Kissena Park Press. And this poem, this book here is,
you can can get it on Amazon.
Amazon. Okay. Just Google Lana Heckman Ayers. She has a lot of work out there, and you should make yourself familiar with it, as familiar as you can.
The Toe. Despite how mystically moonlight snakes a path across the lake tonight, and because love is the property solely of country music, and since Plath's bell jar of pain runneth over for all eternity, I will write only of a toe, a plain enough thing, the fourth toe on my mother's right foot, and how each day, despite my bathing it, my application of greasy salve, the wrapping and re-wrapping to apply just enough pressure, it continued to blacken. The toe, like a banana, passed sweetness to the other side of neglect, or salt beef dried to jerky, tenderness abandoned to gristle. So I write about my mother's toe, how the doctor tells us it must go, as if speaking of an ingrown hair or a splinter, as if it were nothing important, nothing a person spent her whole life walking on grass, over damp mopped kitchen linoleum, dancing backwards in high heels over slick wax ballroom floors, or in babyhood, grabbed for all, googly-eyed, and occasionally even sucked. This dried-up toe, that oddly causes mother no pain, and yet when the doctor says the toe must go, this woman, who was a marble column at father's bedside during his failed chemo, who later presided over father's grave, stolid as a granite headstone. And not long after, this woman who sat composed as Rodin's bather, as another doctor spoke the word mastectomy to her, and all through radiation wore a Mona Lisa smile. This woman does a thing I'd never seen her do. My mother cries, sobs, weeps, exhausts all the tissues in the doctor's stainless dispenser, and keeps crying over this very small rotten toe, this calamity of losing what one least expected to lose.
Mm. Thank you, Lana, for bringing your powerful, wonderful work and words to us, for coming to the cafe today. I'm Lois P. Jones, and my guest has been Lana Heckman Ayers. Look out for Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.
We'd end up like lying there.